Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening in. Before we get into the podcast, I want to send a shout out to KR Aikido, who left us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. This is what he had to say. Down to earth wine talk. Just downloaded and listened to a number of episodes after recommendation online. Glad I did. First, I am always on the hunt for more news and facts about wine, and even better if centered around the Central Coast, California. Second, the hosts of the podcast have a winery and make wine so good experience, and there is a lot of personal storytelling within the podcast. The podcast is very down to earth and packed with full of wine and local facts. While I'm trying to pack more knowledge about wine and our local area, this podcast is great for listening to while driving up to Paso for a wine tasting. While there are some interesting production choices on music and topics, I would say if the topic is interesting, then give it a try. Cheers, and here is to wine on the Central Coast. Thank you so much for listening and for taking the time to leave us a review. I will definitely raise a glass in cheers to the Central Coast. Sláinte. In last week's episode, I brought you to the Seaclo's Castle in Villanay. I hope you had a chance to see some of the photos on our podcast homepage found at bit.ly/listen to Dracena, and that's a capital L and capital D. This week, I am giving you an all-access pass to the conference itself. In today's episode, Peter McCombie, a master of wine, consultant, speaker, educator, trainer, writer, and judge, talks about Cabernet Franc around the world. I truly enjoyed spending time with Peter. He is full of interesting stories, both wine and non-wine. Sláinte.
It's great to be back in Villan. I think this is my fourth time here. And it's great to talk about Cabernet Franc. It's a grape that I really like. It's a grape that, as you all know, is in some ways becoming quite fashionable. I'm just going to cover a few basics. In fact, you'll probably find a little bit of an overlap. I think that when you get people together from different places, they don't always coordinate their research, so you might find one or two familiar things. So let's start with the origins of Cabernet Franc. It is one of the oldest and most important varieties in the Bordeaux region. It is what we sometimes call a classic Bordeaux grape. However, the earliest mention was in a famous book called Gargantua by the writer Rabelais in 1534. It wasn't called Cabernet Franc, it was called Breton. So maybe that's where it comes from. Then, of course, according to Wine Grapes, this marvellous book on grape varieties, there was controversy about whether or not the grape was in fact the same grape as Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, or indeed Carmenère. They were frequently confused, at least until the end of the 19th century, and there's some evidence that even today people get confused. Certainly in Northeast Italy you can sometimes see a name on a label and you're not really sure that what's in the bottle is the same. Although that happens all over Italy as well, and I say that to someone who loves Italy. It seems, according to DNA analysis, that Cabernet Franc is a parent of Cabernet Sauvignon, Carmenère, and Merlot, but they think that it's so old, it's an orphan. They don't yet question what the parents of the grape are. DNA analysis also suggests, and the theory has come down to it, it's probably a Spanish grape, probably from the Basque Country. In fact, one of its parents, Hondarabi Belza, is often confused with Cabernet Franc in the Chacolí vineyards on the Atlantic coast of Spain. It's a grape that ripens in sort of middle season. It's rather vigorous. It's suited to clay and limestone soils, but it performs well on sandy soils if there's no water stress. It has small berries. It can be quite similar looking to Cabernet Sauvignon, but the leaves are less dramatically indented. It buds and matures earlier than Cabernet Sauvignon, and therefore is more prone to colure, but easier to ripen fully. It's very hard wood and small berries. And I'd be interested to talk later with growers here to see if that's how you see the grape perform in Villan, or maybe it's adjusting to the environment, maybe it's starting to perform a little bit differently. Wine made from Cabernet Franc generally is paler, lighter, crisper, and softer, and maybe more obviously aromatic than Cabernet Sauvignon. its aroma really, for me, I think this is one of the excitements about it. It sort of surfs a line between refreshingly leafy and aggressively herbaceous, depending on how ripe it is. And for me, when I'm judging wine, I often find if I use the word herbaceous, it means the right kind of greenness. And if I write green, it means I think the wine is unripe. And I think it's not just Cabernet Franc, but particularly with Cabernet Franc, for me, I don't want it to be overripe. I still want to have that little hint of freshness and herbaceousness. And of course, there is, I think somebody mentioned the word methoxypyrazine this morning. And there are people, there's certainly winemakers in some parts of the world who think that any hint of methoxypyrazine is a bad thing. They need to talk to winemakers in New Zealand, of course, because one of the successes of Sauvignon Blanc is the pyrazine character of that. But I think a little hint of that in Cabernet Franc is really important. So where does it grow? It is, of course, France's sixth most planted red variety. The heartland remains there, the Val de Loire. These days, thanks to better viticultural techniques, including lower yields, and also perhaps a little bit of climate change influence, they are generally producing better quality wines more consistently. Some years ago, I was talking to a very successful and highly rated English wine importer who said to me, you never want to have an agency agreement with a Loire producer, because you don't want to have to buy the wines in bad years. He said, you're much better off buying them when they're ripe. These days, I think maybe things have moved on. I think there is more consistent ripeness, and as I say, better viticulture. It can be used as a blended grape in lots of places, but in the Loire Valley, it generally is the dominant and often only red variety used. Bordeaux, of course, is the other stronghold for Cabernet Franc. It was often planted as a kind of insurance policy against poor viticultural performance from Cabernet Sauvignon and from Merlot, because it buds and flowers at different times. It has been giving way to those great Merlot and Cabernet have been planted more widely because of climate change again. So by 2009, plantings had dropped. Less than half the area planted with Cabernet Sauvignon Bordeaux and less than a fifth of Merlot's total area. However, it remains popular in the cooler vineyards and the colder clay soils on the right bank of the Gironde, where it really has a role to play. It's often called Boucher. And of course, with Merlot, it plays an important part in virtually all Saint-Emilions. In fact, that's why we've got a picture here. Some of you might remember the film Sideways. Miles was, of course, a dreadful snob about wine. He loved Pinot Noir and he hated Merlot. And he announced at one point that his favourite wine was Chateau Cheval Blanc. Now, you never know if the scriptwriter really knew that half of Cheval Blanc was Cabernet Franc and half was Merlot, or the other way around, but it's a fantastic film if you haven't seen it. And that is a man drinking a spittoon. back to our list of where it comes from. Of course, in Italy, it's quite widely planted, particularly in the northeast, and as I said earlier, it can often be confused with Carmenere. Again, in the past, often those wines in northeast Italy were underripe and a bit scrawny. These days, I think they are turning out much better. In central Italy, particularly in Tuscany, Cabernet Franc is having a bit of a moment, and I'll come back to that in a later. But there is one particular wine some of you may have heard of called Tenuta di Trinoro, which is south of Montepulciano in Tuscany, who are making an excellent quality Cabernet. There are pockets of Cabernet Franc across Europe, and of course here in Hungary is the other place where it has significant plantings. Only about 2% of world plantings are in Hungary, although that puts them in fifth place after Chile's recent resurgence. In the US, traditionally Cabernet Franc has been grown to provide support in a Bordeaux blend. But in Virginia, New York State, and to some extent Washington State, people are getting quite excited about it because it seems to be suiting local conditions. However, California is where the vast majority, more than 1,000 hectares, but close to 1,500 hectares, are planted in California. Most of it in Napa and Sonoma, and of course you'll be hearing more about that in a few moments. Washington State's interesting because even it's north of California, but because of the Cascade Mountains, it has a more continental climate. In fact, winters can be quite cold, and that hard wood of Cabernet Franc means that it actually can survive quite well. There isn't a lot planted, but it does make good wine. New York State only has about 200 hectares, maybe a little bit more these days. And again, in Long Island, which has a strong maritime influence, it does quite well. But there are other places upstate in the Finger Lakes, which are a little more continental, where it's doing very well. Down the coast of Virginia, they've got very excited about Cabernet Franc as a grape that they, a little bit like Villain, where they think it can really perform well in that place. Having said that, it's only about 10% of the plantings in the area. Canada. These days we have to talk about Canada, we used to, but there is Cabernet certainly being grown there. Some in the west coast in Okanagan, but in fact it's warm enough that it's less needed. But on the eastern coast in Ontario, you're finding more of it. They do make ice wine from Cabernet Franc. Certainly it's a style of wine that I'm not a fan of, but there you go, someone has to make these things, and some people surely like them. In South America, you've got a little bit in Uruguay, you have some in Brazil, mostly in the south, in Rio Grande do Sul. In Argentina, there's more than 600 hectares, mostly in Mendoza. And in Chile, that's where most of the South American Cabernet Franc is. And it's in those two countries, I think, Chile and Argentina, where there's quite a lot of excitement about the potential for the grape. And of course, you'll get a chance to taste some Chilean wine soon. In Australia, it's the same old story. Cabernet Franc is normally planted as a supporting grape for a Bordeaux blend. Across the Tasman in New Zealand, where I come from, most places are too cool to consistently ripen Cabernet Sauvignon. So where you find Bordeaux blends in places like Hawke's Bay, they're often based on Merlot with maybe 15-20% of Cabernet Franc, maybe a little bit of Cabernet Sauvignon, maybe a little bit of Malbec, but they tend to be Merlot blends. And of course, last but not least, South Africa. South Africa's area of Cabernet Franc tripled in the first decade of the century, but it's still less than 1% of the South African vineyard area. But I'll tell you more about that in the next session. Incidentally, Cabernet Franc doesn't make the Organisation Internationale de Vin list of most widely planted varieties. Their definition is varieties that have 100,000 hectares planted globally. There are 13 grapes there. Anyone know what the number one is? Any guesses?
Ailet.
No, not anymore. It's actually a Japanese hybrid called Kaiyoi. And it's grown as a table grape mostly, and most of it grows in China. Now, I've never tasted it, I have no idea, but that is the number one grape. Cab Franc lurks in the lower reaches of the top 20, according to the latest, or the 2015 figures. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about I think Cabernet Franc's having a bit of a moment at the moment. It's got a certain fashionable allure about it. I thought I'd just quote you a little bit from what Janssens Robinson, the well-known, probably the leading critic in the UK, said. He said, "I'm not a huge enthusiast of the sexual stereotyping of wines, but even I can see that Cabernet Franc might be described as the feminine side of Cabernet Sauvignon. It's subtly fragrant and gently flirtatious rather than massively muscular and tough in youth." And I think that's a really good point for me. Cabernet Franc shouldn't be a kind of wannabe Cabernet Sauvignon. She said, "Because Cabernet Sauvignon has so much more of everything, body, tannin, alcohol, and color, it's often supposed to be necessarily superior. But she says, I have a very soft spot indeed for the more charming and more aromatic relative Cabernet Franc." She talks about the displacement of Cabernet Franc in Bordeaux and how it's coming back on the right bank. And she said, "But if ever proof were needed that Cabernet Franc can produce truly majestic, ethereal wine, it's provided by Chateau Cheval Blanc. 2/3 of his vineyard is planted with Cabernet Franc, the rest being Merlot." The other French region, of course, the range, she says, "Cabernet Dominant French here can be weedy and stringy in cooler vintages, but when the grapes ripen fully, they have a beautifully silky texture, soft tannins, and a characteristic aroma which has long reminded me of pencil shavings." Again, she goes on to talk about Tuscany and how, particularly in Bolgan and the Tuscan coast, it's now being made as a varietal wine as well as being a supporting grape in blends. Then she gets on to Hungary, she says, "where it can make wines which combine both ripeness and refreshment. particularly around Vilan. And I think that's a theme for me I want to keep coming back to. I think it's that combination of rightness and refreshment that's really important, and I really hope that people here continue to try and make wines in that way. And lastly, she says, Cabernet Franc tends to be grown to a limited extent wherever Cabernet Sauvignon is grown, but I, for one, hope we'll continue to see more Cabernet Franc dominated wines. They are just so easy to drink. And I think sometimes we forget that wine is supposed to be about pleasure. You can take wine seriously as a producer. You can take wine seriously as someone who writes about wine or scores wine. But at the end of the day, wine's meant to be drunk. And I think wine, that's a really important part of its character. Thank you, sir. So who else likes Cabernet Franc? Ellen McCoy, an American writer for Bloomberg, who's become quite influential. She predicted that Cabernet Franc would be one of the wine's hot new trends in 2016, and she asked why. And her answer, it's highly versatile, it makes fragrant, elegant wines with earthy, spicy, herbal notes with a food-friendly, tingly acidity. At the more, if you like, youthful and playful end of the spectrum, some of you may have come across an American website called VinePair. And they ran a piece recently which they called a two-minute read. Of course, young people can't manage more than 2 minutes. So the question they asked was, or the statement they made was, the three reasons you should be drinking Cabernet Franc. And we haven't got time to go into it, even though it's only 2 minutes, but we haven't got time. Number one, Cabernet Franc is more than a blending grape. Number two, Cabernet Franc has tannins for ages. Now, you can interpret that as you like. I'm not even sure as a native English speaker I know what that means, but I think they're saying they like the tannins. And Cabernet Franc can age. Now, what I guess the point for me quoting this is it's deliberately informal, but the point of the site is it targets younger people, and I think that's a concern for lots of us, that if we need to replace us old people who maybe are not drinking so much or dying off. And we need young people to be excited. And I think if we have people like that who are turning people onto Cabernet Franc, then that's got to be a good thing. One of the other things I found in my research was a list of the most expensive Cabernet Franc, which I have to say I wasn't looking for, but when I found it amused me. There's always a weakness in lists. But this was from the wine website, Wine Searcher. And what they found, you can see that the three of the top wines are from Clos Rougeur in Saumur-Champigny. Number one, the Le Bourg, comes an average price on this website in American dollars of $532. It's scarce, so it's a wine that tends to get bought up by restaurants, particularly in France, Michelin-starred restaurants. So the small allocation list that is left tends to mean the price goes up. Second is Italian. It's from Marchese Antonori, and it's from the Guado Altasso estate in Bulgari. And they planted some Cabernet Franc there, and they make this as a variety of wine. Renzo Cotterella, who has godlike status in Italy, consults here. Third is another Clos Rougeur. Fourth, the next one's quite strange. This is an Austrian Cabernet Franc, which I have to admit I vaguely heard about, but didn't really know about. And again, I suspect the inflated price is partly because it's really rare and you can only buy it on the website. And you have to buy other things, but that's there. Next up, another Clos Rougeur, and this is the so-called entry level. It's still at $234, so we'd all like an entry level wine like that, I think. Then we had California. So the last four are all Californians. Vineyard 29 from Napa. Yonata, El Alma de Yonata from San Inez. Hourglass Blue Wine, again from Napa, and Oakville Ranch's Robert's Cabernet Franc. And so I guess I mentioned earlier ice wines. So these two Cabernet Franc ice wines, because the Canadians like to jack up the prices, they could make that list. There's a very famous wine from Italy called Alzero from Quintarelli, which sometimes is dominated by Cabernet Franc, but isn't always, so that doesn't make the list. There's one wine from Argentina which just misses out at $99, and that's Bodega Aliana's Gran Enemigo single vineyard Cabernet. So there is, I think it's interesting to see that this grape can actually achieve some quite high prices. I guess it's just food for thought. Who's going to be the first producer in Vilan to have a Cabernet Franc on that list?
Thanks for listening to Dracaena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, and Periscope as @DracaenaWines. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd, or email us at DracaenaWines.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find us more easily. We are found on all of your favorite aggregators. To subscribe easily to iTunes, go to bit.ly/DracaenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/DracaenaPodcast. And that's a capital D for Dracaena and capital P for podcast. Please check out our award-winning wines and find out about our wine club at DracaenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!